Some clients fixate on how others might perceive them. They can get hooked into powerful patterns of negative thought and fall into a deep despair. If you remember in a previous session of this program, Dr. Michael Yapko looked at some of the rigid thinking that fosters depression. Here Michael goes one step further. He shares what can happen when depression is tied to an unchangeable part of who a client is.
This is one of the important things as well, that specific clinical populations, if we break them down by demographics, you know, we can see that there are higher rates of depression in this age group, such as the 25 to 44-year-olds, than that group. But when you focus on depression as a process, you don't need to get in the content of each particular clinical group. Whoever it is feeling helpless, is feeling hopeless. How do we change their perceptions about themselves? How do we help them redefine their circumstances? How do we help them develop the resources that they need? So whether I'm working with men or women or young people or old people, it really doesn't matter. I'm wanting to know something about how does this particular person generate the depression they're experiencing? How do they convince themselves that they're helpless and hopeless? How do they convince themselves that life is so unfair that all they want to do is withdraw from it? And it doesn't matter their age or gender, I'm going to have to speak to those particular patterns. I had a young man in his late 20s who had gone to school, gotten a degree in computer engineering, and he was earnestly desirous of getting a job with a particular IT company that he just thought was the greatest company on earth. And so as he was going through school, he was gearing himself towards getting a position with that company by taking what he thought were the right classes and learning all the right skills and all of that. And when he applied for the job that he thought he was a shoe-in to get, he was absolutely devastated when he didn't get the job. Now, here is what I meant earlier when I was talking about ambiguity and projection. If he asks the question, why didn't I get the job? The best answer he could have given himself was, I don't know. And he doesn't know why he didn't get the job. But his pattern, typical of depression, was to immediately project into it the most self-damaging explanation he could give. They didn't hire me because I'm gay. Well, he's now defined the problem as unsolvable since he can't change his sexual orientation. And of course, he doesn't know that's the reason he didn't get the job. But he fixated on it. It became the basis for hating himself, hating the world, thinking everything's so unfair, and really sinking into a pretty deep despair. And so when he came to see me, he was absolutely miserable. And he's telling me the story of what the triggering event was. But of course, by the time depression strikes in someone's life, the risk factors had already been in place for years. Depression doesn't generally strike out of the blue. By the time someone suffers a depressive episode, the risk factors had already been in place. And that was certainly the case with him. He constantly made negative projections about how the world was seeing him because he was a gay male. And the fact that there were other gay males employed by this company, he didn't have an explanation for that. The fact that there are gay males who are pretty happy with their lives didn't seem to impress him any. And so it became a really important part of his therapy to help him learn how to first be more self-accepting that you are who you are. But secondly, you're not a mind reader. And you don't know what other people are thinking. You don't know what the basis is for conclusions that they draw. You have no idea what's going on.
Did you catch what Michael was doing there? He was zeroing in on the client's tolerance for ambiguity. Because, as you might remember from our earlier session with Michael, a low tolerance for ambiguity is often a big risk factor for depression. But once Michael's client could see the ambiguity problem, Michael and his client were then able to work with it.
So helping him with recognizing and tolerating ambiguity was a really big part of his therapy. I gave him the homework assignment that I routinely give people, which is, I want you to identify at least 5 ambiguous situations per day, 5 events that happen every day. At the end of the day, review them, write down what happened. I said hello to someone, they didn't say hello back. Someone cut me off in traffic. I called somebody, but they didn't return my phone call. These are all examples of ambiguous events. You don't know why they happened. But this fellow, just like typical depressed folks, projects negatives into it. So I would have him identify at least 5 ambiguous situations and generate at least 3 different plausible explanations for how or why that could have happened. And one of the explanations has to be positive, one has to be negative, one has to be neutral. Well, he's really good at generating the negative ones, but he's not so good at generating the neutral and positive ones. And once I've trained him to generate multiple explanations for ambiguous events, then I can ask the next question, which is, okay, now that you've generated these multiple explanations, which one is it? And force him to say, I don't know. And to have him internalize that, to have him recognize an ambiguous situation immediately as it happens, immediately generate multiple plausible explanations and push himself to ask which one is it, to hear himself say, I don't know. The ability to recognize and tolerate ambiguity is not only great in terms of treatment, but it's also one of the best prevention tools. And so I gave him that tool amongst others, and it was a relatively short treatment process. He's a smart guy. He got it. He never really realized how much of life is ambiguous and how reflexive it was for him to make negative interpretations of these events. And once he got it, he got it. And he still emails me every once in a while to tell me his latest. Here's the ambiguous situation I faced that 5 years ago would have been devastating, and I just sailed through it. And that's great. That's what you hope for.
As Michael said, developing a tolerance for ambiguity can help resource clients against relapsing into depression. In the next section, we're going to look at ways to approach depression when it's connected to trauma. I'll see you there.